talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning. It is December 12th, and this is the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Kate Marquis.
Kate Marquis is here. Kate reviews for We Are Movie Geeks, and she also reviews for the Jewish Light. How you doing, Kate?
I'm doing fine. How are you, Tom?
What movie have you reviewed for the Jewish Light lately?
Well, I haven't reviewed one recently, partially because they haven't made them available in advance far enough. It has to be a week out. I think the last one I did for them...
Denial?
Maybe Denial. Yeah. There may be another one, but it's been a while.
Yeah.
But you've been reviewing lots of movies for WeAreMovieGeeks.com. Yes, I have. Both of you guys have been super busy reviewing movies because it's that kind of time of year. All right, we got some movies to review, and we got some awards to summarize and things like that. So let's get started with the top 12 of the box office. Number 12 was Almost Christmas. Jim reviewed that. Made $1.4 million.
Hanging in there. Last week of it, I'll bet.
Yeah. Miss Sloan was number 11. You guys, I haven't seen that. I was going to go see that at the high point of the weekend.
Yeah, I don't know how wide. Around to it. How wide that opened, I wonder.
I'll tell you right now. 1,648 screens.
That's fairly wide.
Yeah, yeah. It made 1.9. Hacksaw Ridge is still in the top 10. 2.3 million. Mm-hmm. Trolls, number 9. 3.1. 8, Manchester by the Sea, and only 366 screens. It was number 8.
That's good for that many screens. Yeah, to get in the top 10.
3.1 million. Yeah. Nocturnal Animals. Actually, that expanded. It is now on 1,200 screens.
Yes.
And it was number 7.
Terrifying people.
So that's the first
people.
Time in the top 10, I believe, right?
Yeah. Yes, yes. Yeah, terrifying to disgusting more people in more theaters.
That's right. Viagra sales have shot up after Nocturnal Animals. Number 6, Allied. That's a good movie. $4 million.
Yeah,
exactly $4 million.
That's hanging stronger than I thought. That's right. Nice. Yeah.
Number 5, Doctor Strange. 4.6. Number 4, Arrival. It's still in the top 5. I made $5.6 million. Number 3, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Made $10.7 million. Number 2, opening, and an opening this weekend was Office Christmas Party, and it opened at number 2, so that's pretty good for that movie.
Yeah, that's the highest it's ever going to be.
Yeah, you guys are going to review that here in a minute. Oh, Jim is. Mm-hmm. 17.5, and then Moana for the third week in a row is number 1.
It's last time at number 1, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this movie that opens Friday, it'll knock it off.
Yes, I think so.
$18.8 million for Moana.
Yes, yes.
All right, so let's start reviewing some movies. Jim?
Yes.
You, lucky dog, you have seen Office Christmas Party with Jennifer Aniston.
It's F-word Christmas, B-word. Let's get mother F-word drunk. Watson.
It's my birthday.
Ah. Really committing, that's nice.
I'm the lucky one. Yeah, she's maybe third or fourth billed in this. She's more of a supporting character in it.
Is it wacky?
It is wacky. It is also zany. Wow. And it also is way overindulgent, and people are getting overserved at this Christmas party. Basically, it centers really on Jason Bateman, who kind of, as his character was in Arrested Development, is the sea of sanity and the ocean of craziness.
He's good at that.
I mentioned my review. He can say more with just a look or a little phrase than most people. You know, well, time. He's a master of timing. But as the film opens, he's getting a divorce, and this is it's finalized. It's like 2 days before Christmas. He's losing everything in the divorce except the shirt off his back or his bones, and he's headed back to his office. He's a manager at I guess it's like a data service or data storage type company, and there are several branches out throughout the country. And his immediate boss is a overindulgent, talking about that fellow named Clay, who's played by T.J. Miller. And I had a feeling, I mentioned in the review also, that this might have been written for Will Ferrell, because it seems to be one of these sort of baby men or child men.
Didn't T.J. Miller get arrested over the weekend?
He got a citizen's arrest over the weekend. weekend for a fight with an Uber driver, as I understand. But yeah, he looks like he parties pretty hard. But he still was at the Critics' Choice Awards last night, I guess, doing that.
Did he have a black eye?
I don't know. He did something weird with his ear on Conan. He stuck a pin through it or something. He's an odd character. Mm-hmm. But yeah, everything seems to be going pretty smoothly there, especially the fact that Jason Bateman's character, Josh, gets to work with the lovely Tracy, who is sort of a sorceress in the cyber tech world, played by Olivia Munn.
Oh, I like her.
Oh, yes, yes.
Is this rated R?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But it's no, just lots of drugs, lots of drinking, lots of craziness, and they're all getting psyched up because it's nearly Christmas. They're ready for their office Christmas party, and Kate McKinnon plays the head of human resources, who's going around telling everyone, "Have fun, but not too much fun." And here's a list of things you can't do, and you know, at the party, don't hook up, don't this. But everything is great until Jennifer Aniston comes into town. She is Clay's sister, stepsister, but she has been put in charge of the entire company, while Clay just has that one branch. And she says the profits aren't high enough. They're going to close that branch. They're going to start laying people off unless the profits are get higher. And certainly no Christmas party this year. And they find out that there's a head rep for a bigger company that's in town on a visit, played by Courtney Vance. And he's staying in a nearby hotel. And Josh and Tracy and Clay say, well, if we can get this guy signed up with us, we'll avoid this branch being closed and the layoffs and all that. And Jennifer says, yes. So they go over and meet the guy. He's not that impressed with their proposal. And then they say, hey, do you like to party? And they decide with like 3 or 4 hours notice that the party is back on, mostly to attract this guy's business.
To impress this guy. Okay. So you reviewed Office Christmas Party for WeirdMovieGeeks.com. Yeah. How many stars did
it? Oh, I think I gave it two. It kind of falls flat. It seems like all the jokes, this is one of the things that irks me about comedies, all the jokes are in the trailer pretty much.
Go on YouTube and watch the trailer.
Yeah, just about. They kind of waste this wonderful cast. So Rob Corddry is in it, the great Jillian Bell. They just don't have a lot to do it. Even though it's credited to 6 screenwriters, I have a feeling if it was that it was just an outline, and they said, well, we'll get these people on the set, and they'll come up with some stuff. And sometimes that works, and sometimes it doesn't. It just seems to drone on and on. I want to single her out in the review, an actress, stand-up comic named Fortune Feimster. You've seen her probably in the trailer playing Jennifer Aniston's Uber driver, speaking of Uber again, and she steals the few scenes she's in. She goes on this rant about how Carol is an old person's name and said, I'm Carol, I heard the bombing of Pearl Harbor on the radio. It's a funny bit, and she gets the last laugh in the movie, actually, right before the final fade out. And of course, during the credits, they have bloopers and stuff that wasn't in there, and they're not that funny.
No, bloopers are never funny. Bloopers haven't been funny since Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, that's when they were really funny.
Yeah, all right, so it sounds like this movie has a few moments here and there, but you really don't recommend it.
It's kind of like watching somebody play a video game. This is like watching people party. It's just not that fun unless you're partying with them,
So Jim doesn't really recommend Office Christmas Party. Kate, you saw something called Frank and Lola, and that stars Mike Shannon and who else?
Imogen Poots.
Oh, Imogen.
Yeah,
I like
Imogen
her.
Poots.
I like her name. I just like saying Imogen Poots over.
Boy, is she cute!
Oh,
plus she can act. Yeah. And the two of them.
She was a pop star.
Yeah, she was.
That's right.
And she actually played the deadly force in Green Room.
She was Knight of Cups also.
Frank and Lola does not open theatrically in St. Louis. I think it maybe opens in some other cities, or it's going to VOD or something. But go ahead and talk about it a little bit.
Is it a thriller? It is on demand. Yes, it's a thriller, but it's kind of a sexy, heated, sort of noirish thriller. But
really?
It's not a noir film in the sense that it's not black and white. It's not, channeling the 40s. There are no fedoras.
Yeah. Like
there are no
heat,
slanty. Yeah. Well, a little bit. It's actually a lot sexier than that. There's going to be moments that are going to remind you of Tango in Paris.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Is there butter involved?
There's no butter involved, but there's a lot of very edgy stuff.
But he's not as explicit. Yeah, well, he's a chef in it, isn't he? So there is some butter involved or just some spices?
Not in the sex scenes.
Oh, okay. okay.
Yeah, because there is cooking, and there's certainly knives involved.
Well, I was telling you that before we went on that I saw Justin Long promoting this on with Colbert, and the clip he brought made me think that it was a comedy, but there are some comedic moments in it, but it's really like a serious deal. Huh?
Right. It's much more tense and edgy and sexy than it is comedic, although it has a few moments. It's mostly the two of these folks meet. They couldn't be more different. They're a complete mismatch. They know they're a mismatch, but they can't keep their hands off each other. And it turns out that he's, kind of a little more reticent person, but he has a kind of streak of violence in him. She is a woman with a lot of secrets, despite her outgoing personality, and that kind of makes for some problems. Let me see. This is a first-time director. And Matthew Ross, who'd been a screenwriter, did a lot of television, but this is the first feature film he's directed.
Okay.
He's
you reviewed that for Weird Movie Geeks, though, even though it didn't open here. How many stars did you give it?
I gave it 4. It has a kind of Hitchcock
five.
Vibe,
like
too. And a lot of it has to do with the relationship between the two of them. It's just so hot, and it's so powerful, and the two of them are just really wonderful.
Well, speaking of Michael Shannon, now would you say, even though this hasn't gotten a theatrical release here, is it better than what was the one? Was that with Rachel Weisz? That was Person Unknown. Was that it?
Oh yeah, I think this is better. I mean, I like that one. Well,
is this better than that one? So
it's much better. That was kind of a goofy premise, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, the premise is more suited probably to a comedy. Someone changing identity. And, if they're not doing it for nefarious purposes,
And the two of them didn't have a lot of chemistry, I didn't think. So that didn't help. These two leads have a lot of chemistry, and it's just a much more edgy sort of film.
Well, speaking of edgy, that in that clip that Long brought on Colbert, he's talking to Shannon. Shannon gives him a look. And I don't think anybody on screen today gives a more intimidating glare or stare than Michael Shannon.
Yeah,
so I love that about him. I'm waiting for that.
And, Michael Shannon's had a heck of a year. I counted him up. He was in like 10 films
this
year. He also played Elvis.
Yes.
Played Elvis?
I thought he was great. Elvis and Nixon.
All right, so Kate recommends Frank and Lola. Let's move along. You two saw Collateral Beauty. I saw the trailer for Collateral Beauty, and I thought it looked pretty god-awful, so I didn't really mind missing the screening the other night.
Howard is a brilliant, creative, charismatic guy. He used to love life. Right now, he hates it.
I try to talk to him, I try to reach him, and he's not there. I miss him.
He writes letters.
Who are they to?
Howard doesn't write letters to people. He writes to things. Time. Love.
What did I miss, guys?
Well, I don't know. You're probably going to be reviewing this for us, aren't you, Kate? Did you want to go ahead?
Well, and it looks awful, and it's not as awful as it looks.
That'll be on the poster. Not as awful as it looks.
But that's mostly because of Helen Mirren, who plays. The premise
is
she does, but she plays an actress playing death.
See, that's not what you get from the trailer. You think these are actual magical little personifications.
Yeah. Well, and actually, the film kind of undercuts itself at the end with a couple extra scenes it doesn't need. But Will Smith plays this fellow who's grieving over his child who died 2 years ago. He is kind of bringing down the company he founded with the characters played by Edward Norton, Kate Winslet, and Michael Pena, and they need to get him declared incompetent so that they can sell their company.
Yeah. It's kind of an advertising agency, I guess, right? Yeah.
Right, that's right. So they decide what they're going to do is hire these three out-of-work New York actors to kind of gaslight him, in which they're trying to convince him that they are these concepts that he talks about, death.
Well, he actually mails letters to every day.
Right, he actually mailed letters to. They found that out. Time, death, and love. So Helen Mirren plays the character Death, and she has to kind of walk up to him in the middle of the park and convince him of that. And he has the kind of response you would expect someone to have to that, which is, this is a crazy lady, get away from me.
Now, they have a private detective following also who's videotaping all this.
Yes, because the idea is they're going to show him talking to these three actors, but they're somehow going to erase the actors from it so he looks like he's talking to thin air.
Oh, that's where they lost me. That went completely off the rails. sat there and say, technically, they can't do that.
Right.
You know, well, so my BS will alarm. David Frankel, who directed Marley and Me and The Devil Wears Prada, were his most popular films. Yeah, yeah. So. With Marlon, we know he knows how to manipulate audiences.
But on the strength of the actors, you're able to pull off a lot of this far-fetched stuff until late in the movie when all of a sudden there are these two scenes at the end that kind of destroy what they have been able to do just walking this line between fantasy and what might actually happen.
I'm still at a loss. Is it funny?
There are parts of it that are funny.
Parts of it are funny. Parts of it are heartbreaking. Parts of it are just a Hallmark movie.
Well, really. It's like the Facebook memes almost turned into a movie. You know, little sunsets with things like "Hang in there" and you know, death makes us stronger and all that stuff. And I don't know if you mentioned this or are going to mention this in the review, but the people that hire the actors, they each have their own big crisis going on too. They need to be cured.
They have their own crises. They pair up with each of the three actors. Most of what makes this work is Helen Mirren, who plays this egotistical actress who's going to pressure these guys for more money to pull this off. She's touting her own performance while looking for compliments. And she's just so funny that it's almost worth it.
I wish the movie were just about her. I'd love to see a movie only about that character.
But what about when they knock over the dominoes? That is so cinematic.
Well, that's what Will seems to be doing after he's gone through this trauma. The film opens with him giving the stirring pep talk like 3 or 4 years ago to the whole staff, and then they go to the present day, and all he does is sit in his room and set up dominoes.
Right. He comes into the office every day so he can set up dominoes instead of doing the actual work.
And refusing to sign the papers that allow them to sell the company.
All right. So you're reviewing this for us, Kate. How many stars out of five do you think you'll be giving?
You know, I haven't quite decided. It might be 3. It might be 2.5. It's not something for people to run out and see.
So Jim and Kate are kind of down the middle on this collateral beauty. It's not a total waste of time, but it's not very good either. According to them, I haven't seen it.
Helen Mirren, she makes it.
Yes. Thank heaven for Helen Mirren.
There you go. All right, we got one more movie to review, and that is La La Land.
It's pretty strange that we keep running into each other.
Maybe it means something.
I doubt it.
Yeah, I don't think so. You could just write your own roles, you know, write something that's as interesting as you are.
What are you going to do?
I have my own club.
Getting a lot of Critics Awards, hasn't it? I think Best Film over at the...
Broadcast Critics last night named it Best Film.
Best Film, and we've all seen it. It is a very nice movie. Sort of a wholesome, safe, non-political...
It's got a little dramatic edge to it, you know. It's got some real heart-tugging moments, though.
It does. It's a very good film. Who wants to talk about what it's about? It's not about a whole lot.
Well, I guess I could go ahead and do that. La La Land, as you might suspect, is set in California. It is set in the present day. And it has the best opening, I think, of any movie this year, even better than Nocturnal Animals. It starts with a fantastic dance number in the highway in Los Angeles, which I guess was where a lot of people spend a lot of their time in California, is stuck on the highway. And it centers around this couple played by Ryan Gosling, plays a fellow named Sebastian, and he's a struggling pianist, musician, and he's devoted to the history of jazz, and he's disgusted that this famous jazz club has turned into a samba and tapas place that's aggravated him. He's actually the J.K. Simmons is in it, who is his grumpy boss at a bar restaurant where Ryan plays, and he says, just stick to the set, it's around Christmas time, and he only wants him playing Jingle Bells and all that, while Seb wants to at least sneak in one or two of his little jazz numbers. This story is balanced by the story of Emma Stone's character, who is playing a character called Mia, and she is a struggling actress. She's working in a coffee shop, but the coffee shop is on the lot at Warner Brothers, so not a lot of these stars will walk in for a cappuccino and all that, but she's also going on the audition treadmill of hell, taking these little scripts, going into reading to these producers that are sometimes, you know, looking at their phones, distracted. You know, she gets out one line and they say, thank you! And then Mia has to leave and then has to walk through the waiting room outside with all these other redheads that are statuesque and, you know, gorgeous and all that. And it's very frustrating for her. And she goes goes home. She's sharing this gorgeous apartment with her three buddies. They decide to go out on the town. And Mia's car gets towed. It was in a tow zone, and she's walking, and she stumbles upon the club where Ryan Gosling's character is playing the Jingle Bell stuff, and almost meets him full on then, but then meets him later on at a pool party where, in order to make ends meet, Ryan's character is having to be part of an 80s band. Yeah, it was a very funny scene.
It is.
And then we start with the full-blown romance, except Emma's seeing a fella, but he's a real buttoned-down business guy and always has his stuff going on. And while Ryan's character appeals to her romantic side, he wants her to meet him to go see Rebel Without a Cause at the Rialto, because it's similar to this part she's auditioning for. And they end up going to Griffith Observatory and having this wonderful dance number. And it's wonderful, yeah.
Well, I hope you talk about the visual aspect of this, because although it's a contemporary story, there's a lot of visual references to color musicals of the 1950s, 50s movies, 50s fashions, when the three girls go out for their night on the town. They're all in these brightly colored dresses, just like they would be in a 1950s musical.
And this first dance number between Emma and Ryan is against this gorgeous sort of reddish, purplish sunset of Los Angeles. And I think I mentioned after I was at the screening, you could take just about any shot from this film and blow it up and put it on your wall, frame it. It's just gorgeous-looking movie. And the songs are great.
Yeah, that's a strength. I mean, it all sounds, you know, it's, for people who haven't seen it, it might sound sort of, I don't know, precious or something. Like, oh, God, why would I want to see that? But the songs are really good.
The bottom line
is the songs had not been good, and this movie could have really fallen flat. But the songs are jazzy and catchy.
Yeah, the music, the music of the songs and the soundtrack is by a fellow named Justin Hurwitz. The lyrics are by Benji Parsek and Justin Paul. And I predict at least one, maybe two of the songs will be up for best song. I love the audition song at the end of the film. Emma Stone goes on the audition. It's going to make her break her career. She's going to give up on acting unless this goes well, and it's spectacular. Also, what's getting a lot of attention is the City of Stars. I guess it's City of Dreams, City of Stars that Ryan Gosling does, and that's wonderful also. But yeah, their careers come to a conflict because Ryan's character Zeb thinks that Emma wants him to be more successful, so he hooks up with the shady character played by John Legend, who's wonderful in it, and becomes part of a touring band called the Messengers. And Emma kind of thinks he's sold out, and puts a little monkey wrench into the romance. She's trying to do a one-woman show, sort of a showcase for her talents, and she's being true to her her art form, and thinks that he's gone the pop route. And it has its ups and downs. The ending is really unexpected for a lot of folks. I hope they can handle it, because I think the ending works. And even though it's a little melancholy, I think we mentioned
bittersweet.
Yeah, Tom, I was talking with you about it. We both singled in on a great musical from the '60s, "Umbrellas of Cherbourg," and it has sort of that feel to it. The whole thing really does.
The music's actually similar too. Michel Legrand did the music for.
Yeah. So if I were reviewing La La Land, of course I would give it 5 out of 5 stars.
Yeah. How many stars would you give it, Kate?
I think I'd probably give it 4.5.
I'd give it 4.5, too. I think it's slightly oversold, and it's not going to make my top 10, but
I like
if
the,
I were to do top 20, it'd probably make that. But.
I like the production numbers and the music and the way it looks, but I had issues with the story, and I think other people will.
Yeah, but it's a very, very good movie, and if the Oscars want to give it Best Picture, which I would guess right now that it's probably the front runner. It's kind of like The Artist a little bit, sort of a safe choice.
Yeah. Well, The Artist, being silent, though, it was kind of chancy that it would do anything at the box office.
We didn't mention how wholesome this movie is. You claim that he says the F word at one point.
He does.
I must have been in the bathroom or something, because I don't remember that.
He does.
Nobody smokes in this movie. Nobody cusses except that F word that Jim heard.
Just one.
Did you hear it? Did you hear the F word?
No, I think I missed it. But
well, she's talking to about her one woman show. So what if nobody shows up and he says, well, F them,
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. But besides that, I mean, there's no violence. There's no sex. There's no smoking. There's there's no some, other vulgarities.
And,
no,
yeah, there's some emotional violence, though. There's right. there's a fight yeah. that they have. And it's pretty, you know, people in the audience that we saw it with went, oh, my gosh, yeah. That hurts.
All right, you know? So we highly recommend La La Land. And you'll be hearing a lot more about that movie over the next month or so. And let's see, today we're seeing a movie, but we can't say what it is. It's a top secret movie.
Yes.
If we have mentioned it, they will come and they will take away our firstborn, and they will decapitate
hunt
us and then take
down.
Us to Detroit.
Yes.
take him to Detroit.
I don't know why they're being so secret about it. This movie opens in like 4 days, but they don't want us to say, so we have to follow their little rules. Speaking of that, Star Wars Rogue One opens Friday. So
it does.
I guess we can come out next Monday and review that. What else we see?
I should go see that.
Lion. You guys watch Lion? Or you guys?
I did. Yeah,
yeah,
I saw Lion.
Yeah, we're going to have that coming out. Is that the 21st, the same day as Jackie?
Yes, right.
So that's a couple of other big Oscar films.
Okay, we can review next Monday. And Why Him? Jim saw Why Him.
Yeah,
we'll have to review that.
I saw Why Him.
You did,
yeah. We saw that.
I also saw L.
And,
oh, yeah, we can review that.
And when Sing opens either the 21st or 23rd.
That opens the 21st.
Wow, we're going to be busy.
Why Him and L open the 23rd. And then on the 25th, we hit Fences.
Yeah, yeah. Generally, it's odd because on Christmas Day, generally like five or six movies open. But because it falls on a Sunday, I guess that's why they're just doing one.
What about
just
Silence? When are we going to get Silence?
I don't know if we're going to get it.
They're saying January for us, but who knows?
Yeah, yeah. So definitely not by the end of the year.
I read an article the weekend saying that's going to dominate the award season.
Wow. Okay.
It's really the best film of the year, but we don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Show it to us.
We haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Right. Let's see. Let's talk about some stuff going on locally. Last night I went to Webster U.
Oh, is that another silent film
night? Yeah, I saw this really great silent film I'd never even heard of.
Ooh, what'd you see?
It's called Shoes, and it was made in 1916, 100 years ago exactly. Wow. It was directed by a woman, and her name escapes me. I don't know. I should have written it down.
Oh, no.
And it was very interesting. It's about this young, poor girl who works in the Five and Dime and desperately needs two pair of shoes, so she ends up selling her body to buy a pair of shoes. It costs $3.
Now, is this the same film by the person that said they've been doing the other silent films?
Yeah, last Sunday. It was called The Dumb Girl Portici.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. I'm glad I went. This weekend, they're showing a great movie called The Wanderers from 1979.
And then there were The Wanderers.
Leave the kid alone.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night at 7:30 or Webster U. This is based on a novel by Richard Price that I read over and over and over again when I was a teenager. This novel was like my catcher in the rye.
Is he the same fellow that did Clockers?
He did do Clockers.
Okay,
yeah. And he did the, what was the one with Richard Gere?
Not Blood Brothers.
Yeah, Blood Brothers.
Oh, wow.
He did that also. Have you ever seen The Wanderers, Jim?
Just bits of it. It's been a long time, though.
Yeah, I remember when the movie came out, and I was excited, but I was away at college, and it didn't play in my college town, so I never saw it at the theater. Karen Allen is in it, and I interviewed her last month about a Slift thing that she was involved in, and that's the sort of retro movie I wanted to bring up in that interview, and she said that when she's in Europe, that's the movie everybody wants to talk to her. Apparently, The Wanderers has had a huge cult following in other countries.
This was her movie in between Animal House and Raiders.
Exactly, it was. And she does a great strip poker scene.
Oh, I recall that, yes. I would recall
Wall
that.
Wall is in it, and Linda Manns is in it.
Yeah.
But it's about gangs, and I don't think it did well because it came out right after The Warriors, and they have similar titles, and they're also about a bunch of different gangs around New York, and I'm wondering if people thought it was just a Warriors knockoff or they were confused or something, but it didn't do any box office in this country when it came out in 79.
Yeah.
You want to say something?
Yeah, I want to go back to that silent film, Shoes. The director is Lois Weber, who was a major director in the silent era.
Okay. And they also showed a short that she made. It was really interesting. It was made before that. It was called Suspense, and it had split screen. I don't know if I've seen
it. Wow. I've seen that. That's terrific.
Yeah. Wanderers is set, in the 50s, late 50s, 60s? Okay.
Yeah, it's really a great movie. I'm going to go see it, definitely, Friday night. And speaking of Friday night, we were supposed to be doing a Christmas Story Friday night over Schlafly, but those knuckleheads over Schlafly Bottle Works double booked our movie room.
those bums.
So, but that's okay, because I can see The Wanderers now. We've pushed Christmas Story back to the 22nd, which is a Thursday, and that'll be at Schlafly Bottle Works starting at 7 o'clock, and it is a fundraiser for Helping Kids Together, which is a worthy charity that sends children with health issues on trips, And there will be all kinds of fun stuff. I think live music, and we're going to auction off some Christmas Story items.
Yes, we are.
Stuff like that. And so,
should I tell them about a couple of the
sure.
items? Okay, I'm auctioning off a couple of things from my collection. One is a 12-inch action figure of the old man, Parker, showing off his major award.
All right.
And the other is a set of four drinking glasses, each illustrated with a scene from the film. Randy saying, "I can't lower my arms." I think the Double Dog Dare is one of them. I think it's Italian, it's pronounced Frogili.
I've got a talking Christmas tree ornament that says that kind of stuff.
So those will be up for auction.
So that'll be a lot of fun. This past Saturday, I saw It's a Wonderful Life over at the High Point Saturday morning. Good grief, wow. They had a lot of people there. Over 300 people showed up to see It's a Wonderful Life. And I sat, my favorite seat in the High Point is there's a seat about halfway down on the aisle where there's no seat in front of you.
Yeah.
I love that seat. So I got there early to get that seat. And I guess the empty space in front of you is for in case somebody in a wheelchair shows up. Well, like 10 minutes before the movie started, the world's tallest wheelchair pulled into that spot. And this woman, she didn't have any legs. She probably had diabetes and had her legs removed or something. So she was standing up on her stumps in this tall wheelchair. So it was the equivalent of having somebody standing in front of you.
It's like
by that time, the theater was full, but so I had to grab my mother-in-law. We had to move down to like the third row.
It's like having that giant of Alton or something sitting in front of you with a cowboy hat on.
Anyway, that was a lot of good. That was a lot of fun, though. This Saturday at 10:30 at the High Point is White Christmas.
Me and my man.
The two greatest figures in show business, Bing and Danny, as two ex-GIs who form the perfect partnership. Rosemary and Vera Ellen as the sisters who have them in a spin.
And that will be just as crowded, if not more crowded. They've already sold advance tickets and get there early.
Yeah, do we ever discuss about the one of the chorus boys is in one of the scenes?
Oh, yeah.
It's George Kaharis is in a scene with Rosemary Clooney.
Really?
I didn't realize that until a friend pointed it out. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's him,
I've never seen White Christmas until about a year ago.
Yeah, it's got some great numbers in it.
How did that happen?
I don't know. I'd never seen Sound of Music until the 50th anniversary thing I did last year. All right, anything else going on locally? Oh, Andy over at Late Night Grindhouse, Destroy the Brain, did, what did he do over the weekend?
Jack Frost?
Jack Frost, which I did not go to. I didn't really want to sit and watch a movie that went straight to VHS in 1997. But next month, he's decided to show Friday the 13th, Part 5. Which is also known as Freddy Lives, or not Freddy Lives, Jason Lives. I get Freddy and Jason mixed up sometimes. He showed Part 4 a few months ago, so this is the second Friday the 13th. I don't really care for these Friday the 13th movies that much. I've seen them all, but I get them all mixed up. So that, I'm not even sure what weekend that is. That's January something something. We'll talk about it more.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get into the all these awards and noms and things like that, we did lose somebody. That was Van Williams. Van Williams was basically a TV guy, and we tried to avoid TV guys. But we're going to cut him some slack because he was the damn Green Hornet.
And damn right.
And he had a cameo in the Bruce Lee story, right?
Yeah,
he was on the big screen.
Yeah, he playing a director of an episode of the Green Hornet. So I kind of enjoyed that.
Yeah,
Van Williams.
The Green Hornet only ran one season, and it's better known for really for its – it's kind of like Dark Shadows. It's better known for its iconography than actually sitting through – it's not nearly as good as Batman. It was made by the producers of Batman, but they didn't have very colorful villains. They were kind of these generic.
Well, yeah, like crime bosses and things
gangsters
like that.
And
yeah, they were looking to make it more of a realistic thing. Yeah. Well, Batman is kind of in this wacky fantasy world. Green Hornet was, somewhat, what if there was really a guy? And of course, he's wanted by the police in the show. And I tell you, it was the talk of the schoolyard after it aired on Friday nights. We loved it mostly for, Batman had the Batmobile and his utility belt, but Green Hornet had the greatest accessory in fighting crime, Kato.
And in the show really comes to life when Bruce Lee is doing his thing.
Yeah, I guess during the height of Bruce Lee mania in the 70s, they edited some episodes together, so it did play some theaters.
I have that on Super 8.
And I think they mentioned in the Dragon story that in Hong Kong and places like that, the show was known as the Kato Show. The Green Hornet was his sidekick.
Yeah, and like Batman, they merchandised the heck out of it. I actually collect vintage Green Hornet toys.
I
got
had,
the board
yeah.
game and the and the lunchbox and the color forms, and I got all that stuff.
I had some great trading cards. Yeah, they put out some great stuff. I think he was a suit for Captain Action also. Yeah,
that's right.
G.I. Joe type doll.
Yeah, so Van Williams played the Green Hornet, and then after the Green Hornet, he actually joined the fire department.
Yeah.
And was a firefighter and actually singed his lungs and had some health issues that resulted from his years as a firefighter and really never went back to acting. And I don't know what he did. He did some of the convention circuits.
Yeah,
over the
years.
I never met him.
I bet he made out like a bandit at those convention circuits. Yeah. But he did do one feature film I looked up. He was in a movie called The Caretakers. He had a major role in. That was about Robert Stack film. And he had, I guess, a little cameo.
Before Green Hornet?
Yeah, this was before Green Hornet. And then it was, I guess his first film was A Tall Story. Which is the first film of Jane Fonda, I believe.
Okay. So. All right, so RIP to Mr. Van Williams. All right, let's talk about some awards because it's December and it's the end of the year and we're sort of obsessed with movie awards. We talked about the LA and the New York and the National Board of Review last week. The nominees for the Golden Globes were just announced this morning. This is like hot off the press. In fact, this paper is like warm in my hand. It's so hot off the press. The Golden Globes are, I guess, after the Oscars, I guess, are considered the second most prestigious or certainly the second most watched.
Yeah, it kind of helps people when voting for their Oscars a little bit.
Yeah, although they break things into dramas and musicals, which
comedy / musical.
I mean, like The Martian, of course, was a comedy last year.
Oh boy, did I laugh!
Yeah. Sometimes it doesn't seem quite. I don't know why they do that, but I'm sure they have their reasons.
Yes.
All right, let's talk about the nominees. I only have the movie nominees because we don't care about the TV nominees.
Right.
Hacksaw Ridge, of course, was nominated for Best Drama. That's a shoo-in for Best Picture. Hell on High Water, Lion, Manchester by the Sea, and Moonlight were the five drama awards. We're not going to bother guessing these stuff. Maybe when it gets closer to the award ceremony, we can pick what we think is going to win. Best Actress, Best Performance by an Actress in a Drama.
Yes.
Amy Adams' Arrival, Jessica Chastain, Miss Sloan, Isabelle Huppert, Elle, and Ruth Negga, Loving, Natalie Portman, Jackie.
Yeah.
I kind of see the Oscars sort of, I don't know if Jessica Chastain will get an Oscar now, though.
Yeah, that's a tough category.
Because
yeah.
I guess they'll put Emma Stone in there. Yeah. But I basically see that as the five Oscar noms. Unless they give them to Annette Bening. That was such a terrible movie deal. Did you see that? 20th Century Women.
I did.
Did you? Did you like it?
Not particularly. I mean, it had some moments, but actually, it was pretty rambling.
Yeah, it was. And it didn't tell a story. I turned my list in, and it was number two on my worst of the year. Because I really hated it. But we'll get into that later when we review it. All right, Best Performance by an Actor in a Drama. Well, this cuts off. I don't know who the number five guy is. Number one, Casey Affleck for Manchester by the Sea, Joel Edgerton for Loving, Andrew Garfield for Hacksaw Ridge. He's going to win. Viggo Mortensen for Captain Fantastic. Actually, he was pretty good in that. And I can't figure out who the number five is.
You think it's Chris Pine?
No, I can
tell. For drama? I think it could be.
No, because I can tell that it's a short. See, it's a short word.
Okay.
All right, well, I did the same thing with musical, too. It got cut off at the bottom. Anyway, Best Motion Picture, musical or comedy? 20th Century Women, are they freaking kidding me? Yeah, I was just saying that's the worst movie of the year.
It's a comedy, yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, there are some funny moments in it, but very few.
That's funny moments, but I don't think a comedy.
Jeez. Deadpool. Oh, come on. Deadpool.
Is a comedy, yes, sure.
Yeah, it's a funny superhero movie. Florence Foster Jenkins, is that a comedy?
Yes, it is.
Oh, my God. La La Land. Okay, that's a musical. There you go. Sing Street, that's a musical. That's kind of nice.
Oh, Sing Street is in there. Great.
Yeah. That's not terrific. A lot of Oscar, especially with La La Land's going to take a lot from Sing Street, I think.
Oh, yes. We got into a big fight about Sing Street and La La Land yesterday at the thing. Yeah, that was fun, yeah.
Best performance by an actress in a motion picture, musical, or comedy. Annette Bening for 20th Century Women. Lily Collins, Rules Don't Apply.
Okay.
She should get Bushiest Eyebrows Award.
The Peter Gallagher Award for...
Haley Steinfeld. She's very good in Edge of 17. I don't see her getting an Oscar now, but she is very good in that film.
She's very good.
Emma Stone, La La Land, Meryl Streep, Florence Foster Jenkins. All right. So I'm sure Emma Stone is probably a shoo-in for that award. Unless they give it to... Annette.
But I mean, turn Meryl, because they love Meryl.
Oh, yeah, they do love Meryl. Well, actually, they're giving her a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Golden Globes.
So she's going to be there anyway.
Yeah, so they probably figure they don't have to give her the award. Best performance by an actor in a musical or comedy, Colin Farrell in The Lobster. That was a hilarious performance.
But that's definitely a comedy.
Yeah, it's a very dark comedy. It's a very dark comedy. Ryan Gosling, La La Land, he's not going to get an Oscar now for that.
He might get a nomination.
I doubt it. I don't.
He could.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I've been wrong before.
There's a lot of love for that film.
Yeah, Hugh Grant, Florence Foster Jenkins. Is that a lead role? I thought that would be more of a
I would have thought of supporting.
Oh, Jonah Hill, War Dogs. Oh, there's a shoe-in for the Oscar right there.
Actually, I thought he was pretty good.
In War Dogs. He's good in War Dogs.
I take it back then. And number five, I don't know, because my sheet got cut off. So we'll fill you guys in next week. Or go online. Oh, best motion picture animated, Kubo and the Two Strings, Moana. My Life is a Zucchini. I've never even heard of that.
Yeah, me neither.
Sing and Zootopia. You saw
Trolls?
Sing.
Trolls
Sing?
Isn't there? Did you mention
Trolls? Trolls is not in there.
That's what I saw in one of the line things. Mm-hmm. I saw six in mine. But no, the biggest story there is the exclusion of Finding Dory. Yeah. This is going to be one of the few times Pixar doesn't have a dog in the race. Uh-huh. You know,
not this is Golden Globes, though. Keep in mind.
Yeah, but still, Oscar. You know, it's Pixar. That's a major force.
Yeah, so. I know. But My Life is a Zucchini got its spot.
And of course, you know, that Dory is the highest grossing movie the year, so.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right, best motion picture, foreign language.
Oh, yeah.
Divines, never heard of it, from France. I've seen that. That's great. That's from France also. Neruda from Chile, never.
I'd like to see that.
That was good. Yeah.
Oh, you saw that?
We have a screener.
Good.
The Salesman from Iran/France. How come France gets three? I guess at the Oscars, the same country can't have more than one. And then Tony Erdmann, which is German. I got that screener in the mail, but I didn't see. You guys saw it.
Yeah, I saw that. That's pretty entertaining.
I guess, what was Shin Godzilla?
Yeah, I hate that they missed The Handmaiden and A Man Called...
Yeah, that's a shame. Yeah. And Our Little Sister.
Again, this isn't the Oscars. It'll be different.
Yes.
Or for that matter, Julieta.
I like Julieta. All right, best performance by an actress in a supporting role in any motion picture. I like the way they put that in there.
Yeah.
Viola Davis, Fences. Naomi Harris, Moonlight. Nicole Kidman, Lion. Say, I haven't started to watch Lion. Is she really good in that? Nicole Kidman?
She's good. Yeah. Okay. It's definitely supporting.
I had some issues with the film, but her performance was good.
Yeah.
Octavia Spencer. I'm sorry, Miss Spencer. Hidden Figures.
Dazim Nadim.
Remember last year at the Oscars, who was the host?
Travolta mispronounced Nadim.
No, last year at the Oscars, who was the host?
Was it Chris Rock?
No, it was the skinny white kid. Well, I guess it was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, when Neil Patrick Harris was.
And he gave Octavia Spencer like this envelope with all these clues or something. She looked very confused.
Yes.
Anyway, I got off subject there. Michelle Williams is the fifth nominee for Manchester by the Sea.
Who's for sure getting an Oscar nom. Mm.
Yeah, but I bet Viola wins the Oscar.
I don't know, man. Michelle Williams is really strong.
Yeah, but Viola's role was a lot more substantial.
It's more of a, it's more of a best actress thing. But the movie's not very good. So,
well, we'll talk about that next. Yeah. Some people love the movie. Not me, but some people. I'm reviewing that one, by the way. Okay, best performance by an actor in a motion picture supporting role. Maharashla Ali, Moonlight.
Yeah, for sure.
Jeff Bridges, Hell or High Water. Simon Helberg, Florence Foster Jenkins.
That's a surprise.
Dev Patel, Lion. Now, isn't he the lead in Lion?
I thought he was. Who is?
Well, I think they think the lead. Well, they think the little boy. Yes.
Okay. Aaron Taylor Johnson for Nocturnal Animals. That's ridiculous.
For doing a number two on the front porch.
Yeah.
Should have been Michael Shannon.
Should have been a lot of people.
Yeah, should have been one of the guys from Denial, I think, you know. Timothy Spall.
Or Vince Vaughn from Hacksaw Ridge.
Sure.
All right, best director, motion picture, Damien Chazelle, La La Land.
Oh, sure.
Tom Ford, Nocturnal Animals.
They love that film.
Mad Mel Gibson for Hacksaw Ridge. He's a shoo-in for winning.
No.
Barry Jenkins for Moonlight. Oh, come on. Kenneth Lonergan. Manchester by the Sea, I think, deserves some writing awards, but not directing. Good grief. All right, let's move on to best screenplay. Damien Chazelle, La La Land. Tom Ford, Nocturnal Animals. Barry Jenkins, Moonlight. Kenneth Lonergan, Manchester by the Sea, Taylor Sheridan, Hell or High Water.
I think Lonergan will definitely get that one. Definitely. Yeah.
Original score, Moonlight, La La Land, Arrival, Lion, Hidden Figures.
Yeah.
I don't recognize the names of these composers except Hans Zimmer. But that's okay. What about the? You know what had a really great score was Jackie.
Yeah, that was real interesting.
That was
by
a female composer.
Yeah. I think it could get an Oscar now for best original score.
That's really strong. I put that down for best.
It was very striking.
That was my matter of fact. Well, I was going to say we'll talk about that a bit more.
Let's move on. Here we go. Best original song, Can't Stop the... Who cares about these best original songs?
There's some good ones this year.
Is there? Yeah. Gold from Gold. What the heck is Gold? City of Stars from La La Land.
Gold is the movie with Matthew McConaughey where he's got a big paunch and shaved his head and he's playing a real-life guy that
is
called Gold.
Yet?
Not here yet. January.
Okay. I'm seeing the trailer quite a bit.
All right, City of Stars. Can't Stop the Feeling from Trolls. Music by Justin Timberlake. Yeah. All right, so those are the nominations for the Golden Globes. Well, when is the Golden Globes?
It's usually about the first or second week of January, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
About the middle. Yeah.
But much more prestigious than the Golden Globe Awards would be the St. Louis Filmmaker, or not St. Louis Filmmaker, St. Louis Film Critics Association.
Yes.
And Jim and Kate and I are all in the film.
I helped count these babies up into the wee hours
on
Sunday morning.
He worked his little finger to the bone.
So we'll be announcing the winners of the St. Louis Film Critics Association. Next Monday, which is the morning after my big Christmas party, you guys.
Yes.
So I'll be hungover.
Yes.
But you guys had your meeting yesterday. I had to miss it because I was at the toy show selling overpriced crap. I mean, rare collectible toys.
Making a bundle off the suckers.
Yeah. But you guys came up with, we all came up with our 5, 6, 7. Some of these have 7 nominations.
They might have included some of the ties. Well, we decided some of the ties. I've got it all on my annotated.
We have the final list.
So you have the list. Why don't you talk, Jim?
Well, do we want to start with worst or save that for last? Let's save that for last.
Do you want to start at the end of the list scene?
With scene, best scene. Best scene number 5 is the airport fight scene, the smackdown on the tarmac from Captain America Civil War. Number 4 is a really funny scene. Would it be that simple? That's the scene with Ralph Fiennes and Aidan Einreich in Hail Caesar, where he's giving him a line reading, and he just can't get it. Number 3 is the encounter between Casey Affleck and Michelle Williams on the street corner in Manchester by the Sea. Number 2 is the hysterical opening credits for Deadpool. And number 1 is, I talked about it earlier, that opening traffic jam scene in La La Land.
None of my favorite scenes made the list.
What was your favorite?
My favorite scene was in Heartbreak.
It was the diarrhea in Wiener Dog.
Yeah, he says, Lord, what do you want from me now? And he turns around and he walks away from the ridge towards all the fire and the smoke and the screaming fellow soldiers. That was so profound. And then I think my number 2 was when you first see Shin Godzilla when he comes out of the water and he's got these big googly eyes and this big goof. He looks like something Ed Big Daddy Roth might have designed. It is so bizarre and frightening and funny all at once. That is an amazing scene. But I don't think anybody else in the film critics saw Shin Godzilla because
did you?
They had like 6 screenings over 2 weeks of it.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
It didn't even make foreign film. It is easily the best foreign film of the year. Easily! Yes.
So you want to tackle...
All right.
Speaking of foreign film, you want
to
tackle
that? We're going to have to pick up the pace, kids.
I'm going to do foreign film. So our 5 nominees for that were Tony Erdmann, A Man Called I don't know how you pronounce it, Our Little Sister, The Handmaiden, thrilling, and L. Thriller.
L is great. Okay, good.
Shall we get to the actresses?
We can cover all these here. I'll do the next one. Comedies, Don't Think Twice. What the heck was that?
That was the thing with Michael Birbiglia about the improv group.
Forest Foster Jenkins, Three's Popstar. Hey, Popstar was on my list. That's cool.
Yeah,
and Hail Caesar
was
on my list. Deadpool is number one. I had the Richard Linklater thing. Everybody Wants Some. That was my number one.
Yeah. Now, for an action film?
Yeah, go for it,
action film. Jason Bourne, Hacksaw Ridge, which won, I think, the broadcast critics the other night, action film. Deadpool, Doctor Strange, and Captain America Civil War.
Yep, and that was a landslide. Oh, here we go. Best horror film, Don't Breathe. That was a good one. Doctor Strange. See, I'm the one who sort of suggested we added horror. I don't remember adding slash sci-fi. Because I don't consider horror and sci-fi to be remotely the same thing. And I think horror movies are the ones that are neglected at award season, and sci-fi movies aren't. So I don't know why this is horror sci-fi. We're going to need to address that in January. Yeah. Anyways, number three, 10 Cloverfield Lane, to Arrival. And, of course, number one is The Witch, which is easily the best horror film of the year. Why don't you do documentaries Kate?
Yeah, let me do documentaries. Our five nominees were Gleason, I Am Not Your Negro, which didn't play here, but is a great film. The Eagle Huntress, De Palma.
Which also did not play here, which is a great film.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And Wiener.
Is Gleason about Jackie Gleason?
That's what I thought originally. No, it's about
Steve Gleason, the football player who gets injured or
something. Oh, man, that's a rough one, that movie.
All right, Jim, do animated features.
Okay, well, it went to six of that one. We're deciding on it. It's going to be five?
Five.
Okay,
that's what Lynn said.
Okay, so we're going to go with April in the Enchanted World.
Never heard of it.
Yeah. No, it's April in the Extraordinary
World.
It's Enchanted here.
Yeah, and
that's
and
wrong, though.
Finding Dory, Moana, Kubo and the Two Strings, and Zootopia.
Keep in mind, this is the nominees for the St. Louis Film Critics Association.
Yes,
When's a new song?
We've only got like 2 minutes left. Let's burn through these. How Far I'll Go from Moana, You're Welcome from Moana, Drive It Like You Stole It from Sing Street, City of Stars from La La Land, and the Audition Song from La La Land. Let's skip soundtrack. Musical score. Oh, Jackie was number two. That's cool. Number five was Neon Demon. Now, that had a great score. Moonlight. Number three was Arrival. Number two was Jackie. And number one was La La Land. I think Jackie had a better score than La La Land. I think La La Land just had good songs. But
should we skip to screenplays then?
These are nominees. They're just they're in alphabetical order.
Well, they're in alphabetical
order. So you don't need
them. Okay. I stand corrected.
All right.
I'm sorry. They're not. They're in
order of how many votes they got or points they got. So adapted screenplay was Fences, Nocturnal Animals, Lion, Love and Friendship, and Arrival. And original screenplay
was Manchester by the Sea, Hell or High Water, La La Land, Loving, and Moonlight.
All right. Supporting actress was Lily Gladstone. What movie was it?
That was Certain Women.
I haven't watched that yet. I got the screener. Naomi Harris, Greta Gerwig for 20th Century Women.
Yes.
You know, I like Greta Gerwig, but she was not good in 20th Century Women. You know, that's what I love about Greta Gerwig. She's always like the shining star. She's always the happy one. She's always the one that, when you surround yourself with sad people in movies, she's always the one that cheers you up. In this 20th Century Women, everybody's morose and sad, including Greta Gerwig. So I hate to see her in a movie like that. I mean, you know, she's a fine actress, though. All right, let's
Viola Davis and Michelle Williams.
Okay,
Michelle Williams.
I just had to go off on
and
a
supporting actor. Supporting actor, we have Dev Patel in Lion, Michael Shannon in Nocturnal Animals, Lucas Hedges, who's the boy in Manchester by the Sea, Marisala Ali in Moonlight, Jeff Bridges in Hell or High Water.
All right, we gotta move.
Actress
Amy Adams, Isabelle Huppert, Ruth Negga, Emma Stone, Natalie Portman. Actor Tom Hanks, Viggo Mortensen, Joel Edgerton, Ryan Gosling, and Casey Affleck was number one. Director Arrival. No. Yeah, Arrival.
Arrival.
So Arrival got a lot of love from the St. Louis critics.
It did.
Yeah, I was surprised.
That's surprising because I didn't really care for it. Moonlight, Hell or High Water, Manchester by the Sea, and La La Land. And Jim, I'll let you do the best picture nominees from the St. Louis Film Critics Association.
All right. Number five with the vote tally is Arrival, then Moonlight, Manchester by the Sea, Hell or High Water, and La La Land.
Where's Hacksaw Ridge, damn it? Okay, we've got to wrap this up, unfortunately.
Yeah,
we'll
barely, it almost
Monday.
Made it.
No worst.
We're going to, we've got a worst thing. We'll talk about that next week, but we've got to wrap this up, unfortunately, because these guys got to get out of here and go to a movie. I can't say what it is. And I got to go home and take my mother-in-law, I should say, to the doctor. So we'll be back next week, and we'll review a bunch of more stuff and talk about a bunch of more awards and have a lot more fun. But for now, I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Kate Markey.
And be sure to tune in again next week.
Black leather, rock. Black leather, ta-ta-ta. Black leather.
Oh, nice, Dave. Hello.
Hello, darling.
Hey, 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 hey. Black leather, ta-ta-ta. Black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather rock.